Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Lucia Malonic. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
In 2003, the United States military launched an operation against forces loyal to Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. 2 days before U.S. President George W. Bush approved plans for the attack, his national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice, contacted the Russian government. Russian officials raised objections and offered arguments against the invasion of Iraq. But even though we disapproved, we didn't leak what Rice told us, or what was planned, a government insider noted. The insider said the discussions show how tense relations between the two sides are now. His comments came after Britain accused the Russian government of approving the poisoning of a former Russian spy and his daughter in Britain. The insider said Russian leader Vladimir Putin now believes relations between Russia and the West are permanently damaged and cannot be repaired. Back then, in 2003, even though relations between us were strained, there remained a level of trust, the insider said. There is none now. There is zero trust between Russia and the West. He rejected the British claims of the Russian leadership approving a nerve agent attack on former spy Sergei Skripal. The Russian insider spoke to VOA on the condition that his name not be used in this report. The man occupied a leadership position in the government of former Russian President Boris Yeltsin. He then became an important member of the team of Russian President Vladimir Putin. He remains connected to the Russian government, but no longer has an official position.
The insider does not expect an improvement in relations between his country and the West anytime soon. His comments are like those of the Russian president. They suggest that any attempt to reset ties is unlikely during Putin's next term in office. He doesn't think it is possible, and he has given up trying, the insider said. He pointed to the expansion of NATO to parts of the former Soviet Union as a critical event in the relationship. Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania all joined the alliance in 2004. Another major event, he said, came with Western objections to Russia establishing closer ties with other former Soviet republics. This led to a face-to-face argument between Putin and Condoleezza Rice during a 2006 meeting. By that time, Rice was the U.S. Secretary of State. She told Putin the former Soviet republics were now independent states and should make their own decisions without what she saw as Russian threats. Then came the political unrest in Ukraine in late 2013 and early 2014. It led to the ouster of the country's president, Viktor Yanukovych, a Putin ally. Russian officials blame Western governments for inciting what is now called the Maidan unrest. They deny those protests were a popular uprising against Yanukovych. Now what? The Russian insider asked. The Ukraine problem won't be solved for a century. The conflict in the Donbas region will remain frozen, and Crimea will remain Russian. And so are we going to remain hostile to each other? Two nuclear-armed nations with their missiles pointed at each other? That is very dangerous, he said.
Russian officials blame the West for the worsening relationship. They are comparing it to the Cold War, when Western countries were competing against the Soviet Union and its allies. Officials say the return to Cold War-like relations and the sense of pessimism show just how difficult it will be to repair ties. They say the United States and Europe are likely to remain unfriendly as Russia reacts to what it sees as a U.S.-led plot to limit its influence. For example, Russia is active in Syria and has tried to influence events in the Middle East. Some people in the Kremlin hoped it would be different with Donald Trump. But I wasn't holding my breath, the insider said.
Earlier this week, Britain's Daily Telegraph newspaper published an opinion piece by British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson. He wrote about the Skripal poisoning. Johnson described the nerve agent attack in Salisbury, England, as one in a long line of hostile Russian acts towards the West. On Monday, European Union foreign ministers expressed their support of Britain over the nerve agent attack. They called on Russia to provide urgent answers to questions raised by the British government. The ministers stopped short of backing Britain's claim that Russia was responsible for the attack. However, they said they took the British findings extremely seriously. Among other aggressive behavior, say Western officials, is Russian involvement in Western politics and elections, such as the 2016 U.S. presidential election. They point to Russian financing and support of populist parties and increasing use of social media campaigns as part of an effort to weaken the European Union. On March 15th, the Trump administration blamed Russian agents for carrying out a series of attacks on computers and computer systems. They say these cyber attackers targeted American and European nuclear power stations and other utility infrastructure. I'm Lucia Malanig.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
For VOA, Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. This week, we will give you some tips on how to use modals to make requests and give permission. Some common modals for expressing permission are may, can, and could. But these modals have multiple meanings that can be confusing for English learners. Children in American schools learn to use the modal may when asking for permission. A student might ask the teacher, "May I be excused?" before leaving the room. When students asked, "Can I leave the room?" their teachers often made a joke, "You can, but you may not." The teacher was saying the student is able to leave the room, but does not have permission to do so. May is the most formal way to ask for permission. The distinction between can and may is slowly disappearing in English.
These days, it is not always clear if may is being used to express permission or possibility, or both. Let's look at some examples in the language of internet privacy policies. When you visit a website for the first time, you often see a pop-up box asking for permission to collect information about you. Privacy laws in some countries require websites to tell you what information is collected and how it will be used. A common privacy statement includes this sentence: "We may collect various types of information when you visit any of our sites." Let's see what this legal language really means. "We may collect information" means that you give the company permission to collect information about you. In other words, you allow the company to save your email address or your computer's address. But may has multiple meanings. In addition to expressing permission, may also expresses possibility. For example, "It may rain" means that there is a possibility of rain.
Let's go back to our privacy example. "We may collect various types of information when you visit any of our sites." The policy contains some clever legal language. "We may collect information" means we have permission to collect information. But it could also mean there is a possibility that we will collect information. One could make an argument for both meanings. As an internet user, you should assume both meanings of may are part of the policy. A third modal for making polite request is could. For example, "Could I please have some water?" Could is the past tense of can. However, when asking for permission, could does not have a past tense meaning. Could has the same meaning as may when making requests. It is equally polite to say, "Could I leave early?" or "May I leave early?" Could is used with any subject to ask for permission. For example, "Could I open the window?" or "Could you open the window?" are both grammatical.
Be careful with may. When making a request using may, only I can be the subject. If you are making a formal request to dance with someone, you would say, "May I have this dance?" Not, "May you have this dance?" May followed by you does not express a request. It expresses a wish, as in, "May you live long."
But that's another episode. Until next time, we'll leave you with a song of permission by The Temptations.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. On July 4th, 1863, a huge Confederate army surrendered at Vicksburg, Mississippi. Union forces had surrounded the city for 47 days. Food was gone. The situation was hopeless. The Confederate commander gave up. The terms of surrender were simple. The Confederate soldiers promised not to fight anymore. In return for this promise, they were released on parole and sent home to their families. Never had Union forces won such a victory. 30,000 Confederate soldiers were now out of the war. 60,000 guns and 170 cannon were now in Union hands. The Mississippi River was now under Union control. Larry West and Morris Joyce continue our story of the American Civil War.
The victory at Vicksburg went to General Ulysses Grant. He was named commander of all Union armies in the West. Then he was sent to Chattanooga, Tennessee. The Union army there had just been defeated in a battle along a little river called the Chickamauga. Now the Union soldiers were resting and reorganizing in Chattanooga. The Confederate line stretched halfway around the city. The Confederates had artillery on Lookout Mountain. They controlled every road into the city, except a rough one through the mountains. They had blocked the Tennessee River, above and below the city. And they had cut the railroad. The Confederate general said he would let hunger force the Union army to surrender.
Grant arrived in Chattanooga late in October. The city was full of hungry Union soldiers. They had been without supplies for almost a month. Grant wasted no time. He quickly sent troops to fight the Confederate force blocking the Tennessee River. He sent others to fight the Confederates blocking the road to the nearest Union supply center. Within 1 week, supply wagons were rolling into Chattanooga. Within a few weeks, the defeated Union army was ready to fight again.
General Grant sent his men against the middle and ends of the Confederate line at the same time. There were few Confederate soldiers at Lookout Mountain. That end of the line fell easily. The center of the line was along a low hill called Missionary Ridge. It held for a while. Then Union soldiers, acting without orders, forced their way to the top of the hill. The Confederate line broke. Southern soldiers threw down their guns and ran for their lives. The Confederate army withdrew south into the state of Georgia. Tennessee was completely in Union hands. The way was now open for the armies of the North to march into the heart of the Confederacy.
It was clear that the South could not win the war. Too many Confederate soldiers had fallen in battle. None were left to take their place. Supplies were very low. There was not enough food to eat, no shoes to wear, and little left to fight with. No one held any hope of getting supplies from outside the Confederacy. The South was circled by Union troops and warships. All seemed lost. Yet Confederate soldiers refused to stop fighting. They would not surrender. The war would not end until the Confederate armies were defeated by military force.
There was no question that the North had the military strength. Supplies were no problem. Factories were producing more than ever before. Manpower was no problem. Men continued to join the Union Army. Fewer than before, but still enough to make it a powerful force. The problem with the Union Army was its generals. Some were too careful. Some were unwilling to fight. Some did not know how to fight. The only general who seemed able to win victories was Ulysses Grant. That is why President Abraham Lincoln named Grant commander of all Union armies. Lincoln depended on him to end the Civil War.
Grant went east in March 1864, 5 months after the battle at Chattanooga. He decided to make his headquarters in the field with the Army of the Potomac. He said he would not command from an office in Washington, but he went to the city to explain his plans to President Lincoln. Grant noted that in the past, the separate Union armies had moved and fought independently. He said they were like a poorly trained team of horses. No two of them ever pulled at the same time in the same direction. Under his command, Grant said, the Union armies would pull together. They would hit the Confederates with so much strength in so many places that the rebels could not stop them. Grant said all the armies would attack at the same time.
Grant spent the month of April preparing for the big campaign. The main target, once again, was the Confederate capital at Richmond, Virginia. The Army of the Potomac had 120,000 men. It would move against Richmond from the north. General Ben Butler had 50,000 men. He would move against Richmond from the east. General Franz Sigel would bring thousands more through the Shenandoah Valley to the northwest. These forces were three times the size of Robert E. Lee's army near Richmond. In the west, William Sherman had three armies with more than 100,000 men. His opponent, Joe Johnston, had just 60,000.
General Grant kept details of the campaign as secret as possible. Reporters asked President Lincoln when Grant would move. The president answered, "Ask General Grant." "General Grant will not tell us," said the reporters. Said Lincoln, "He will not tell me either." The final Union campaign of the Civil War began on May 3, 1864. After 2 days of marching, the Army of the Potomac reached the Wilderness. It was a thickly wooded area west of Fredericksburg, Virginia. That was where the Union Army had lost a battle to the Confederates 1 year before. That was where the two armies would fight again.
The battle quickly became a blind struggle. The woods were thick. The smoke was heavy. The soldiers could not see each other until they were very close. Shells set the trees on fire. The wounded could not escape the flames. Their screams filled the air. After 2 days, General Grant decided that the Wilderness was not the place to fight Robert E. Lee. He wanted to get around the end of Lee's army. He wanted to fight in the open, where he could use his artillery. So he began to march his men toward a place called Spotsylvania Courthouse.
Lee moved his men as fast as Grant. When the Union Army got to Spotsylvania, the Confederates were waiting behind walls of earth and stone. For several more days, the two armies fought. At times, they were so close they had no time to load and fire their guns. So, they used their guns to hit each other. The Confederate line bent, but it never broke. Once again, Lee had stopped the Union Army. Grant refused to accept defeat. He said he would fight to the finish, if it took all summer. Once again, he ordered his men to march around the end of Lee's line. Lee quickly pulled his men back to a place called Cold Harbor, not far from Richmond. There they waited.
As he had done in the Wilderness and at Spotsylvania, Grant ordered his men to attack hard. It was a slaughter. In less than an hour, 7,000 Union soldiers fell dead or wounded. Grant finally stopped the attack. The Union soldiers returned to their lines. They left behind hundreds of wounded men. For 4 days, the wounded lay on the battlefield crying for help, for water. Men who tried to rescue them were shot down. Finally, Grant and Lee agreed on a ceasefire to take care of the wounded and bury the dead. It was too late for most of the wounded. They had died.
The battle at Cold Harbor ended 1 month of fighting for the Army of the Potomac. The campaign had brought it almost to the edge of Richmond, the Confederate capital. But Grant had paid a terrible price. More than 50,000 dead and wounded. Confederate losses were much lighter, about 20,000. General Grant was beginning to learn an important lesson of the war. The methods of defense had improved much more than the methods of attack.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.